Thank you. This is the meeting of the Strategic Planning Committee for April 23rd, 2018. My name is Alex Steinberg. I'm the chair of this committee, and we're going to go to a roll call. We need a volunteer to do the roll call, by the way, because our secretary is not present so far. Thank you, Janet. Can you go ahead with the roll call?
Yes. Sam Agarwal? Can't hear you. Joseph Davis?
Here in Houston.
Present. Jan Goodman?
Here.
Present. Janet Coburn is present. Tony Leon? Don't hear you. Tom Livingston?
Here.
Present. Afia Nwangaza? Can't hear you. Mansour Sabah?
Hazar.
Present. Nancy Sorden? Can't hear you. Alex Steinberg?
Present.
Present. Carol Travis?
Here.
Present.
Must be in for Tony Leon.
And Tom Voorhees is also on the call, but this is not for quorum. So there are 7 on the call, 7.
Okay, so we have, I just want to clarify. So we have 2 guests on the call tonight, Tom Voorhees and Maskila from KPFA and WPFW, Maskila, Washington. Respectively, and I assume there's no. We hadn't discussed Maskila's presence previously, but I assume there is no objections to that. Is there?
No objection.
Good. Okay. So Maskila, you're welcome to participate. It's just that you're not a voting member of this committee. That's the only restriction.
Chair, this is Janet. Can I just comment on that?
Yes.
So it's my understanding that any director can observe any or sit in on any committee.
That is not correct. Any director can observe any committee. They are not necessarily invited to participate. The committee has to invite them to participate.
Otherwise,
we can have a situation where 20 people try to participate in a committee, which would be unworkable.
Anyway, there's probably some citation somewhere. I don't have it available, but.
That's the only reason why I went through the formality of asking the committee's permission. I sent out a draft agenda, and I'll be glad to, if you didn't get it yet, I'll be glad to read it to you. Shall I read the draft agenda?
It's so short, you might as well.
Yeah.
The people who are on the stream.
Okay, well, we just did the roll call, so we went through that. The 10-minute item to actually approve the agenda. After that, we have approval of minutes, which is another 10 minutes, although I don't believe we have any minutes available to approve tonight, but just in case, I put it on the agenda. After that, there's a report from the WBAA manager. This is something we are going to start. We want to start getting reports from the managers, specifically about the issues relating to the Strategic Planning Committee. That's a 30-minute item. Item number 5 after that is continuing discussion from the last meeting on the based on the template that I handed out, and we agreed to come up with the top five items that we could refer to the National Board for immediate attention. That's a 45-minute item. After that is new business, 10 minutes, and we are set to adjourn at 10:30 Eastern Time. So are there any additions to the agenda? I believe we do have some.
Janet?
Or proposed amendments. Janet, what is your addition?
Yeah, so I submitted two motions by email to the committee that I would like to be on the agenda. If those two motions can be included in item five, the continuing discussion from last meeting, can that just be amended to say including two motions from Janet?
I have no objection to that. Does anybody else have any objection?
I'm sorry, I was distracted. Somebody carried something into my house.
Janet sent two motions, and she would like those motions to be added to item number five, which is continuing discussion from the last meeting. So I was just asking if there were any objections to that. Okay, so I guess there's no objection, so that's fine, Janet.
Thank you.
Any other amendments or anything else? We actually do need a motion to approve the agenda. I think I forgot to mention that.
So moved.
Okay. So let me say that again. Are there any objections or other amendments? Okay. Then the agenda is adopted.
As amended.
As amended. Yes, that's true. There was an amendment. And since we did approve the item on the manager's report from WBI, I'm going to go ahead then and invite the WBI manager to join us on this call. And we can go ahead and the next item on the agenda is approval of minutes. Are there any minutes? Is anybody aware of any minutes? I'm not. I guess not. Nancy is our secretary, but she's been sort of busy lately, so hopefully we'll have some minutes when she returns. Okay, so we're ready. Let me arrange for the WBI manager to join us on the call. In the meantime, Tom, maybe you can begin the discussion.
Yeah, thank you. I would just say that what I've seen from everyone since the last meeting, really interesting. I thought that Carol's comments were quite interesting. I think we've got a lot of material to talk about.
Speak a little bit louder, please. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I'll do my best. I don't know if there's a volume control for me. I've spoken on the radio before. So we heard from Joseph. Among the things that he requested was that I do a report on the activities that I've. Is that better, Mansoor?
Yes, thank you.
Great.
I'm driving, so I.
Yeah, got it. Among the things he requested was an activity report for me, and I prepared that on my flight back from Berkeley on Saturday, and shared that with everyone hopefully that's a useful, that's useful context. Janet and Joseph also sent some suggestions about next steps. Carol has sent a note talking about the some overview kind of things. Actually, were a couple. Janet has sent her her suggested motions. So, so anybody want to start the conversation?
Wait, where are we on the agenda?
We're waiting for
Okay.
We're waiting for Alex to bring in Bertold, but in the meantime, we can use the time.
He'll be joining us any minute. I just
Is that you, Bertold?
Yeah.
Okay, welcome. Welcome to the meeting of the Strategic Planning Committee. I'm looking for your spreadsheet so I can send it out to the committee members. Maybe what we're trying to do is we're going to be inviting all of the managers to address the committee, and specifically we wanted to just have a discussion with the managers about what plans they have for addressing the fact that we have to reorganize our business model, and we have to increase revenue, and we have a loan that we need to pay back. And in addition, WBAI has also got to move. So there's plenty of stuff that, so we'd like to get some of your thoughts on how this is going to work and what preparations you're making for this.
Okay. You want me to talk now or to wait until?
Why don't you, I'm trying to, where in the hell is that spreadsheet? Okay. Yeah, why don't you start your discussion, and I'm looking for the spreadsheet you sent me, and then I'll send it to the committee. But you can start your discussion now.
Okay. So, good evening, everyone. It is obvious, it's very obvious to all that, the programming of all stations need to be changed one way or another. And besides the programming, we basically have to figure out a way to market so that people know what we're doing. I mean, we have some, I was looking at BAI, for example, and I can tell you that I have added 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, about 20 shows from on the grid, which are rather good shows from Professor Richard Wolff, Bonnie Faulkner, controversial, but it's very popular in New York, to Professor Ron Daniels, who addresses the minority communities, international, black alliances and stuff like that, to Arthur Schwartz, who was Bernie Sanders' lawyer during the campaign. So we've added quite a few pretty good shows. However, the result of those shows is very minimal, or at best, they are doing slightly better than the other shows in raising money. And then they still go into the process of learning how to do fundraisers, and they need to have someone, basically Tony Bates, the program director, in those shows pitching. And the experience we have is if we have Tony Bates in all these shows, we make a lot of money. But that's not sustainable. That doesn't make any sense. And so I think the number one thing that I'm trying to push for the network is, like, the fund drive system works, but it has to be enhanced. There has to be a collaboration within all the stations, people like Christian Blasio in L.A., people like Katia in D.C. who are good pitchers, and then who also knows how to get different premiums. We need to have something in order to put those people together so that we can have a more diversified offers at the stations. Also, there has to be training and consequences for producers. Like, if they don't care, they don't do anything, they should be removed. I know that's a controversial issue, but for 7 years I've not imposed any rules, regulations, or punishment. And it's just not acceptable. People think that, management is going to do miracles and keep this thing going without them participating. So that's the number one thing. I'm looking forward to, I think, based on my analysis of how Tom has operated lately, I think he has some experience in giving us some feedback on how to engage people and get them excited again, or, figure out whether or not they will ever get excited or get rid of them. So that's a hard core decision that has to be made, and it has to be, non-sentimental as how we evaluate what we have. So with that in mind, I have four documents that I've gathered together from L.A., from a previous radio station that we were at, WACR, from previous surveys we had put together to put a package of four items that should be going out to producers and staff to let them know what is expected of them and what are the consequences and the so-called punishment. But my problem has always been that I felt that I've been working on something like that for 7 years, but I send it to the executive director, to the national office, to the LSB. It goes back and forth. There's a lot of politics, and it's not done. So over the years, my experience is my instinct has been to just do things myself and not consult. I feel that Tom is a good asset that I'm going to use. And then so I think a document like that would be a lot more effective if it comes from the entire network. Because if it comes from me to the WBI family, it's going to be, oh, this is Bertol trying to do this so that he can get rid of these people. But if it comes from the entire five stations, then it's a document by the network, and it's not something that I'm putting together. So that's important. People have to be accountable. I have to be accountable. Producers have to be accountable. Managers have to be accountable. But besides this process thing, we've been pushing the BI body a lot. We're explaining to our listeners and members that every 85 BI bodies that we acquire will reduce one day of one-year fund drive. And that's assuming about between $12,000 and $15,000 a day of fund drive. So any
I don't know if everybody knows what BI Buddy is. Could you just explain what it is and how much revenue that's currently bringing in approximately?
The BI Buddy is something that I launched in 2012, 2013, when we were starting to have fund drive that were raising enough money that we did not have a cash emergency. For 1 week, we, instead of a fund drive, we just pitched the BI Buddy. And the BI Buddy is a sustained membership support. It's like a membership. We ask you to donate $15 or more per month towards supporting your favorite show. But the way it's designed is that the money is taken automatically from your debit account or from your checking account. We were at 18,000 at one point. We were projecting to be at 30,000, 40,000, but things went sour, and now we are again at about 13,000, 14,000 a month, and we're reviving that. So we have launched an initiative right now that in April we want every single show to raise 5 BI buddies, 5 new BI buddies. So you have 24 hours a day times 7 days. So that's a lot of that's like 168 hours in one day. And we're sharing like 168 hours in one day times $15, the iBuddy, times five, is about $12,000 a month that we could raise. If every single show for the hour show is, you know, just comes up with five BI buddies. And now, you know, maybe I'm oversimplifying it. I mean, if I was a producer and I saw that I had to do this to prove myself, I would become a BI buddy. I would ask my mom to become a BI buddy. I would ask my cousin and some of my friends. I can find five people in the New York metropolitan area to convince that I have a show on WBI 99.5, 50,000 watts, and so that I need them to support me and become a BI buddy. I mean, I support organizations that I don't pay any attention to, I don't listen to, you know, children or children in Africa giving $20, $30 a month. People can do that. People will do that. And so that would generate another $12,600 a month, which is a whole lot of money for us. You know, that's close to that's like $200,000 a year. You know, so we believe that, you know, with initiatives like that, we will be able to sustain what we're doing in New York. Now, your question to us is, what do we do when that's achieved? We are tracking them now. I have a spreadsheet. I have a grid of my shows, and I'm keeping track of all the BI buddies. What do you do when that doesn't happen, when the show doesn't do it? How do you measure the effort versus the results? And I say that five BI buddies, if, you know, they do not reach those results, you give them a little extension, and they have to reach it. And then I'd like your feedback on, you know, measures of the sort. You know, and I want to do this initiative again after the drive, a month after the drive. I'd like to do another one of those, another $5, another five BI buddies per show. And that would generate $25,000 a month. And that would definitely put us in a position that we would be rather comfortable. And that is not, including raising our fund drive day per day to $15,000 a day. If WBI raises fund drive this to $15,000 per day, we would be stable. If we did this two sets of BI buddies, we would be almost stable. If we have a combination of these, plus the CPB grants and other items, we would be stable. We'll be in the black. I mean, most definitely, a whole lot in the black.
Okay. Are you done right now, Berto?
Yeah. So I hope you have the results of the fund drive. If you look at our last couple of fund drives for fiscal year 2016, 2017, if you just did the basic math of looking at if we had $15,000 per day as opposed to $8,000 per day, or $11,000 or $12,000 per day, you know, that would have made a whole lot of difference right then and there. So, I mean, obviously the question is, how do you get there? And what are you doing to, you know, to motivate producers to have fund drive and all that stuff? You know, for fund drive, we have had over 200 premiums. We've put on a PDF, we've printed, we've put on a Google Drive. We have made available to producers. They are all types, from so-called conspiracy premiums to really hardcore real politics, to health, to alternative health. I can send you a PDF of that. I'm willing to share with all the stations. Actually, I think I've sent them to some of the other stations. And the challenge is to convince other producers that these premiums that are not there are viable for their shows, and then they can use them.
Okay, I guess we can start with questions.
Joseph Stack.
Carol Travis for the Stack.
Janet for the Stack.
Okay, let's take the first round. Joseph?
First of all, thank you very much for joining us, Bertolt. And you said something interesting early on that I want to congratulate you on. You said you'd kind of done some unorthodox stuff on your own. And that happens at every station. You're hardly alone. And that's part of our problem. We don't manage our business well. But what we need is people who are openly and honestly put all this stuff on the table and find better ways to do things. And so thank you for your honesty, because that is exactly and precisely what's going to bring us out of this mess. So thank you. I wanted to ask you a question. The question is what is your membership and what is the broadcast population? And let me tell you why. In Houston, we have about 5,000 members and a population of about 7 million, which is a tiny fraction, less than 1% penetration of the market. So I'm kind of curious what that is. Could you answer that now, Bertel?
Yes, we have about 12,000 and change, 12,500 members. And I don't really know what members means, because of a fund drive, we have things that are available. People think they're buying instead of pledging. So we probably have a core of really 6,000 members, and every other people who are eligible to vote as members, I would consider those as, transactional. People who listen and hear this, they like it, and then they said, okay, I'll get this. So I would say our membership is probably closer to the 6,000 to 7,000. But our total eligible members are 12,500.
And the population
Used to be at its height, it used to be about 21,000. It averaged about 18,000 in New York in general in the good days. And so if you look at that's almost a third, and that makes a big difference. Our fund drive used to raise at one point $25,000 in 2013.
Yeah.
And now we are averaging 11,200 per day.
My question again, and what's the population in your broadcast area?
The New York metropolitan area, what was that, 12 million, Alex?
New York.
I thought it was 19 million.
No, our broadcast reach is more like 30 million.
Okay, that's important. Thank you. What I just wanted to point out was that you, like us, have a very, very small market penetration. I think this is one of those cases where a little marketing would really do us a lot of good, whether we could put some PSAs up and ask for some free billboards for right now or something, anything. I think marketing is the lowest, easiest thing in the world, because if we just had our numbers back where they were, we could double or triple our income just from pledge drives right away. Thank you very much. I'm done.
Can I respond to you quickly on that one? Thing that I'm not really good at is some of that aspect. And one of the things that we always thought of exploring is buying lists. Like people who listen to NPR, WNYC in New York, which is our strongest competitor, or people who prescribe to certain magazines and things like that, are normal listeners. A lot of those people, when you meet them on the, they say, "Oh, WBAI, I didn't know we were still on the air. You still exist?" And so that is like, we are the best kept secret in New York. And so buying a list and reaching out, you know, I've always been told that the return on investment is very minimal. And so that's what we're battling with, because we don't have money to waste. So every time we do an investment or we take a chance, and if it doesn't work, it's almost like management really messed up here. So these are some of the things that, you know, good feedback from people who know would be good, would be welcome.
Okay, I think Janet was next on the stack, then Carol.
I think Carol was before me.
Oh, okay, sorry. Carol, go ahead.
I know that Bear told you, my name's Carol. Hello. I'm from the West Coast, from the Bay Area. I know you're in a new situation now, and you're moving and so on, but I wonder if I have a couple of different questions. One is if you know what your operating costs are per month, and what your central service payment share is, and if you expect to be able to pay that. And then you said two things in the last answerings that raised a couple of other questions. One is you said people buy things during the drive, and I didn't know what that meant. And also, how much have you bought lists? And if so, how much do they cost? Or if you're considering it, do you know how much they cost? Thanks.
Before Bertold answers that, let me just bring to your attention that I just forwarded to the committee two items. There's an item showing the history of recent fund drives at WBAI. And Bertold could comment about the significance of that himself. And then there's another spreadsheet which answers some of your questions, Carol. It's the WBI budget, both real and projected, from 2015 going into 2019. And the one from 2017 and 18 is a bit of a mess because we were in the middle of the Empire State crisis then, but what I wanted to see was if, based on realistic projections, the 2019 budget, if that will show a sustainable income versus expenses, given our new expenses and all that. Anyway, go ahead, Bertold. You can reply now.
Yes. Well, operating costs, I think it's about $150,000 a month. Central service, or this central service would be $16,000. I would prioritize that. That I think, and I'm pretty sure I would be able to pay. I would say something though that's a little controversial. With that in mind, depending on how well we do, like last year we paid the national office 1 out of 2 months. And so, you know, we felt that it was more important to pay some of the other essential bills. So we paid them 50% of their bills. I also felt that the money from Jim Crevo and some money from BAI should have been posted towards that central the central service, but I don't know exactly the politics or the decisions on that. People buy stuff. I'm saying that because I feel that I'm not so certain these people really, really, like, pledge to support WBAI. They listen on the air, they turn the dial, there are 30 million people, as Alex said. And then so we offer things that are very enticing, and then they go for it. You know, that sometimes get them to listen more on to the radio and then become members, real members listening. But I feel that
well, it looks like
what happened?
Hello?
I'm here.
Yeah, I'm here too.
Well, I hope you had Tom Lee's still here too.
I assume he'll dial back.
It sounded like his phone died.
Something, yeah.
That's the sound of a hang up or, you know, a disconnect from the call.
So it feels that, you know, people are doing a lot. There's probably a third of people who are members who are just doing this as a transaction, a transactional relationship, as opposed to listeners listening and pledging. So that's why I thought that, you know, our members list was a lot less than, you know, what it says. Like people who've donated $25 or more, it's like we have 12,500. But people who are really listening to the station and understand and know the station, probably half of that, a little more than half of that. So we have not bought a list because we have not, you know, we looked into it a few times, and then we have not bought into it because a lot of people give us feedback as the return on investment is not that much, you know. And my idea would have been to buy a list to reach out to gain BAI buddies, not to get people to donate for one time, because I want to have a sustainable income. I'd like the BAI buddy to bring in $45,000 to $50,000 a month. And you know, we have made the calculation already that every 85 BAI buddies that come in, we reduce one solid day of on-air fund drive.
Okay. I think Janet was next.
Did I answer the question? Did I answer the question, Dr. Kell, as far as the transactional?
I think so.
Yeah.
Janet?
Okay. Hi. Hi, Berthold. It's Janet Coburn. I'm the PNB secretary. First, can you send an email, or you know, email a report to the PNB with what you reported here, especially about this initiative where you are having every show raise 5 WBAI buddies, a description of that, and then the answers to questions that Carol asked you. So that's a request.
Okay.
And then also I wanted to know how can the PNB or other stations help your station to succeed, help you to get that to happen?
Okay. I think I kind of mentioned that before. Thank you very much for that question. It's two ways. Training of our producers. Even though I brought in some new shows and then they are doing rather well, we do not have the resources, not the experience really, to train these producers and to really build them into something solid. I mean, we don't even have the facilities. However, even without the facilities or the goodwill and you know, access to certain places, training of the producers who are willing to come to training to learn how to really put together a good show, I mean, or do better their show, and to learn how to pitch. You know, the biggest issue we have in New York, the biggest complaint about management, which is a legitimate complaint, is one, we have too many on-air fund drive days. Two, we have too many repetitions. And why do we have those? We have those because we don't make enough money. Second, because we have repetition because producers are not producing premium, or if they're producing, they're not producing and making money in their show. You know, so we want to go back to the idea that this producer is producing a premium or is pitching to their constituency in that hour to tell them to support the show first and BAI second, and to donate money third as part of the whole process. And that is definitely not a process in New York. That has been totally disrupted. We have very little, like right now, our fund drive starts next Wednesday. We have one premium registered, okay? And I'm going to go out of my way to send Alex the list of the, I don't know, 200 and change premiums that are excellent, I thought. Like, a lot of them are very political. I mean, you know, like, we just got two premiums right now. One of them is My Journey with Bernie Sanders, with The Revolution Start With First, Fair Shot, We're Thanking Inequality and How We Earn, by Chris Hughes, co-founder of Facebook. We have a lot of things that are very potent and exciting. And we have 270 producers. They need to take those and run with them. And if they don't know how to, we need to train them, and we don't have that capacity. So that's the number one. That's the number one thing you could do for us.
Okay. I'll take another stack. Who else wants to ask questions or contribute?
It's Tom. I have a couple.
Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, so Bertolt, for Carol's sake, when you talk about transactional fundraising, give an example of, it would be like a $250 kind of premium. Just give an example of what that would be.
Okay, so we have 20 bids go on the air and have a premium for the whole package together, $300 a day pack. It's called the first Americans were Africans. So it's a very challenging concept that, Africans came, to the Americas, and a whole lot of documentations. The whole package, like 10 DVDs, is $360, a dollar a day pack. You play a clip, and Tony Bissa interviewing Ben Sardima, the person, the doctor who wrote that thesis, and then he starts teaching. Well, I can guarantee you there'll be like at least 10 people who are just turning the knob. And then they heard it. They're like, wow, listen to this. I want this. So they buy it. And so I would not consider those people listeners yet. These are potential listeners. They might say, well, this is interesting. I should start listening to the station. But at the time they got this, this is a transaction. They are not listeners yet. Now, we could devise a way also to reach out to them, new people, to say hi to them. But, we don't even have that capacity yet because of lack of resource. But these people have just bought something they listened to that they liked. Not because they know BAI or they know who we are.
Great. My second question would be, we've got to match our expenses to our revenues, but my understanding is WBA was dramatically downsized. And when did that happen? And what was this paid staffing before, and what was it afterwards?
Just before Bertolt speaks, Tom, you could see that in the fundraising spreadsheet that I sent to the committee members. It's a history of WBI fundraising, and you can see that at one time WBI was able to generate between $20,000 and $25,000 a day average during its fundraising, and now that number is down to around somewhere between $11,000 and $12,000.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. So Tom, that specifically after Hurricane Sandy. In October, that happened October 29, Hurricane Sandy, we got moved out of 120 Wall Street. We moved to Gary Knoll, and we moved all over the place. And we use that as an excuse, but really, our fund drive capacity went down. We went from a $1 million drive to about a $600,000 drive. And then it went down from that point on. We got rid of like 19 paid staff. Yeah. And so we lost the morning show, the morning show strip. We lost the show from 3 to 5, which was the talk back. And then we lost Earl Caldwell on Friday. It was 1 hour, it's like a low salary. So you're talking about just between those two shows. Our public affairs director, we're talking about $150,000 between those three or four positions. And so, yeah.
And so the date was WBA had how many staff before Hurricane Sandy and how many now?
We had about, I would say, 30 something plus.
Yeah.
And then, and now we have, well, we have seven. We have,
yeah.
I'm the general manager. We have a program director sometimes that went back and forth. We have the development director and the operations director.
Yeah.
So, and then we have 3.5 operations staff, which is necessary to do the board. And that's it.
Right.
So we have like
you have to balance the budget, but going from that many staff to how many you have now is pretty challenging.
Well, you know, basically we have had no choice but streamline everything. That's why we don't do. People criticize us regularly for not having people answering the phone when we do phone drive. We have a phone answering machine, a company that does it. We got rid of Memphis, and then we are totally online and automated, and then we have a website. So 95%, 99%, 97% of all the money that we make comes to the website, and then it goes straight into the bank in the process because we had to streamline. So basically, I do the budget, I do the finance, I balance the book, I reconcile the bank account, and then I send all that information to California for them to do that also. As far as premiums, I also do premiums, and I'm thankful enough to have a volunteer who gives us about 10 hours a day, comes here every day and helps out with the premiums. So that's how we kind of doing it. And so, of course, my development director is no longer really acting as a development director. She's acting as a high-level executive assistant, you know, helping with the website, managing the interns, volunteer, you know, making sure that all supplies come in on a regular basis and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of multitasking.
Okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, let me ask a question then, Bartold. It's clear that WBAI has been working with the really less than a skeleton staff since about 2013 or so. And shortly after Hurricane Sandy, I forget exactly what the date was. And we used to have a business manager. We had a public affairs director. We had we had pretty much a similar staff to the staff at KPFK or KPFA. And it's clear that WBI was hurt by the mass layoffs. They may have been necessary, may not. You can argue that, but in order to what I want to ask you, Bertold, is what would be the if WBI can get an additional full time staff person, what would be the position for that staff person? What you think would be the most vital position that could be filled at WBI in order to bring it back to a situation where WBI can once again raise $20,000 to $25,000 a day during its fund drives. I mean, I have my own idea about that.
Yeah, that's a tough question. That's a tough question. I'll give you three choices that I don't know which one is the best answer. A full time high level executive producer. So in my mind, that would be someone who would be working with, you know, like the morning show and then the 3 to 5, prime time street and, editing and doing all of that stuff. Or a morning show host. Because, you know, having a consistent, strong morning show, it's everything. We used to do, between the morning show and Amy Goodman, we used to do about $10,000 to $15,000 in the morning. So by the time we got to like 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock, there was no more pressure. So Gary Noll was just an extra. And then your afternoon strip from 3 to 5 or 3 to 6 was just extra money again. So that's why we were able to raise $25,000. And then after that, you know, that would release the pressure, and we wouldn't even need to do fund drive after 7 o'clock, I feel. Now, the pressure is always to keep pushing it. And so, well, you know, obviously Amy Goodman is not doing what she used to do again for the network. She used to do $5,000-$6,000, you know, in the hour after a regular show, and now she's doing like $1,800. But between the morning show and Amy Good and Democracy Now, which is from 6 to 10, we used to raise about $15,000. So the challenge would have been to have a serious morning show team that produces that morning show and runs it and raises about $10,000 in the morning. And that would change everything. So either an executive producer or a morning show host or the 3 o'clock show host or 3 to 5, which is one of the things that people complain in New York about is we don't feel the local touch. They want to call in and talk to, you know, we saw somebody called Hugh Hamilton was a good host, very political, very astute, and he used to take phone calls. And we don't have that. So these are the three different positions that I would struggle to figure out which one would be the most, not the best, but would benefit us the most as far as raising money. So that would raise money and then we can hire more. But which one would raise more money faster? And I think it might be the morning show strip. I'm not sure.
Joseph Stack.
Okay, Janet Stack and Janet.
Okay. Joseph, go ahead.
I just wanted to point out that some serious marketing, and I realize that could cost as much as one or two employees at a given location in a year's time. However, it could, considering how horrible our market penetration is, was going to almost effectively double or triple our listenership over the period of a year, whereas, and that will basically double or triple the money that all our shows are making, because that the quality is the same and the product is the same. Whereas, if we hire people who are speculatively going to do things, we don't know. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. And I think that we need to realize that our biggest mistake we have made over the last decade is the fact that nobody knows we're here. You said it about New York. The same thing exactly true here in Houston. I've heard people at the California station say the same thing. That is our Achilles heel. That's where we've killed ourselves. And I think that as painful as it is to put it into a budget, I used to run my own business. It's always the thing, first thing you want to cut, but it's also the worst thing to cut because it cuts your it's your main thing is it brings new people in. And we're always losing customers. So they move out of the area or they whatever happens, there's always an attrition. So I think that when we think about what we're doing, where we need to invest some money now, to increase our revenues, I think marketing is probably the most important thing. Thank you very much.
Joseph, can I ask you a question? And thank you for pointing that out. My biggest fear is spending that money and not having the real know-how to really make it happen. And I understand exactly what you're saying. If we have the expertise to do this, I mean, these are skills. It's like, I mean, I'm coming from corporate America. A third of the money spent, of the operational cost of the company is in marketing and branding. But, you know, I did work with a company here that was helping us out. But, you know, we don't have the structure. For example, we had a company to help us out. And one of the biggest aspects of them helping us out was they needed to have an employee dedicated to them, giving them the data, working with them, and then making it happen. There was no one available. So I had to go out of my way to try to work with them, but that was not satisfactory. You know, I dropped the ball and stuff like that. So the whole marketing aspect of it, is that my fear is that we would waste that money if we don't know who, how, when, and what to do. And so there has to be a real plan to be executed. And I'm certain if that is done properly with the people who know what they're doing, I will collaborate. We can triple our membership. But that's the fear of spending that money for nothing.
I understand. I was in business. It's the scariest thing in my budget, too. I understand.
Yeah.
If I may interject a point here. When I asked you my question, I was thinking of marketing also. And specifically, marketing today is basically marketing through social media. And I think it would be really valuable to have somebody dedicated to promoting WBAI through social media. And that's kind of what this company you hired was supposed to do. I don't know. Apparently they didn't do such a good job for all sorts of reasons. I don't know. But I do think that's the way to do these things. And we have some examples of other nonprofit radio stations that have done this quite successfully, and we might want to ask the people involved in some of those stations, such as WFMU, how they do it, and maybe we can learn a few things from them.
Well, actually, I'm glad you mentioned WFMU. I just reached out to him 2 days ago, and I'm supposed to call him back. We're playing phone tag. I had a few questions to ask him about some strategies. Another thing I'd like to bring to this group is, I'm sure you're not going to like it, is, we are in New York City, and I feel that we definitely can get sponsorship of shows. So now, most people are totally against the idea of sponsorship of a show and things like that. You know, but, I mean, when I'm thinking about WBI Sun Drive, you know, you have a repeating of a premium. It says, like, to be a healthy woman, offered by Gary Noll. You know, you have 200 people buying that. We repeat it over and over again for hours and hours and hours. I'm trying to figure out what is best, to have that, and isn't that kind of a form of a commercial, or to have a one-hour show and then to have 4 minutes saying that this show was supported by so-and-so, as long as we have certain the guidelines, you know, of who so-and-so is and isn't. And I'm exploring that because it really does not make any sense not to explore that, you know, to a certain extent in New York or anywhere in the network.
Okay, I think Janet was on this. Yeah.
Hearing something that sounds like underwriting is disturbing to me. In any case, I'm wondering whether the leadership calls, Tom, I don't know, have looked into marketing as a big topic to discuss amongst yourselves, because all the stations need to increase their membership. But I, one of the questions I had was, do you air, and I dropped off the call for a little while, so maybe you talked about this. Do you air any programs produced at any of the Pacifica stations? And if not, might that be an option to bring in more listeners?
We air Against the Grain. We air Project Fences. We air Guns and Butter. We air Sojourner Truth 4 days a week. We air Letters in Politics, but I don't think that's serving us right, because we're not getting any pitching from that, and we're getting two California shows back-to-back in a time where people feel like they want to hear some local connection. We have Jimmy Dore. These are the people that we get from California.
Thank you.
Yeah. I can send you a schedule, like a one sheet, what we do.
Okay. Are there any other questions or comments?
Yes, Maskila here.
Maskila, go ahead.
Yes. We talked around it, but not directly at it. And I really do think that all of our stations must take a look at our programs. People pay for what they are listening to that they like. And I hope that we can get some help from Tom, especially on this in this area. But if our programming is not good, then people will not continue to listen or donate. And we really, really have to take a very close look at what our programming looks like, especially the programming around drive times, you know, in the morning and the afternoon. Those programs should be at the top, the very best we have. And there's got to be a variety, you know. We've got to have some comedy. You know, I know things are doom and gloom around the world right now, but the ingredient that will help us survive, I think, is laughter. And so we've got to include some of that as well. So anyway, programming. That's all I want to say right now.
Carol would like to add something.
Yes.
Go ahead, Carol.
I just want to support what Ms. Keela said very strongly, because I think that our strongest marketing is strong programming. And I also agree, if you can find good comedy, I think comedy is a very important political tool, because it enables us to talk about really difficult subjects and laugh. Anyway, in general, I think that the programming and her points about programming are absolutely critical. Thanks.
Yeah, this is Tom.
Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, so just to pick up on what Carolyn Maskila said, and a few things to underscore a few things that Berthold said. So the typical public radio station will make half its money in morning edition. And the morning is still the time when pledge is something that is like a leisure time activity. You do it when you're by your radio and can use your phone too. And we all take our phones everywhere. But that focusing on the morning is a great development tool. I appreciate what Berthold said about that. The conversation about marketing is, first of all, I'd say I'm not an expert in that because it hasn't been a big focus in public radio. And you might say that it's the same argument that because we don't do it, it's one of the reasons we could be more successful. When I was managing the station in Washington, we looked at the idea of, you know, what would it take to do enough of a billboard campaign to have enough of an impact in the Washington, D.C. area they have formulas about how many times people have to see the message before it has a percentage chance to change the behavior. And at that time, that was $1 million. And, that was 20 years ago. But I also understand it could be, you know, kind of self-defeating that we just don't do marketing because we say we can't, so we don't. I think the marketing idea is something that could be very worth, I'd be interested in going to see if we can find some people who have some more expertise in that and bring that back to this group. I think it's a really interesting question. So then that also brings us back to the question of the economies of scale, the potential economies of scale we have. If we decided to invest in a morning show that could be used on all the stations, so instead of having to each each station to have invest in whatever it is, 5 or 10 people, to be able to get the leverage of being on all the stations. So anyway, I think this is a really interesting conversation. I'm glad that Alex thought of that, and I appreciate Bertold you coming on and sharing your, you know, the reality of your situation there.
Okay.
Tom, for the morning show, put together by the network, that's where Democracy Now came from.
Right.
Yeah. The only question always is that how do you have it produced at all five stations and still give it a taste of people felt that it's semi, you know, they can feel it's a little local.
Right.
And so that would be amazing. If we could have a 1 hour or 2 hour in the morning or right after the morning to reach out, to have a real, you know, valuable show that reaches out to all the five stations that we created Democracy Now! In New York. So that would be extremely important. And what we did in New York is, for my sanity, I've been pushing this. Someone who spoke before Tom said, we have a comedy show the first Monday of every month downstairs to Waffle Radio. It's kind of breaking even right now, and I don't really care if it makes money at this point. You know, collecting names of people and then collecting comedians that are going to become famous eventually at one point, you know, struggling comedians, is important to us. And then the theater tickets, we're trying to expand that. We have another producer, Malika Lee Whitney. So she has another venue of theater tickets. We feel that, you know, New York is the capital of art, capital of the world, and we barely have 5 hours of art show and art strip. So modifying the grid to put more art strip to talk about the museum and all of that stuff would make a lot of money. Talking about classical music, Lincoln Center, all of those places that are, you know, high-end in New York, reaching out to those people, even putting out flyers, letting them know that they are theater, classical music at a radio station on Sunday for like 5 hours, might work. So that's a whole marketing campaign, with that, you know, with adding to the morning show, you know, would take us to the next level.
I'd like to, this is Maskila. Can I interject something right here?
Go ahead, Maskila.
And this is for everyone. There is European classical music, and then there is African classical music. So please, let's make a distinction on that. European classical music is not going to play on WPFW FM like that, okay? African classical music, yes. We will get over with that. And my hope and prayer is that some of these stations, the other stations, the other four stations, would also consider African classical music. Okay? Yeah, if we decide to go European and that everybody, but also we cannot neglect the African classical music as well. Thank you.
Let me just add that there is also Asian classical music and South American classical music. There's something called world music, and we should.
Yeah, absolutely, and we have done that here in Washington. I was just really responding to what Bertold said just now when he said classical music. Usually, when people say that, they're talking about European classical. We here in Washington, D.C., we have done world music. Okay, so
good point.
But I just wanted to correct the language. That's all.
Okay.
Okay. It's Tom. If I could make one more comment.
Go ahead, Tom.
So, having said what I said about marketing, the thing that I expect that we're not good at any of our stations is using our own air to promote what we do. And it's just a basic radio skill about how often you mention, you know, how you forward promote to the next show, to the next thing that you're doing, the number of times that you say the call letters. I haven't done an assessment of the stations, but That's the most powerful marketing tool that we have.
Yes.
My thought on this, Tom, by the way, is that if we're going to reach the younger generation, we have to be involved in social media, and we have to have people dedicated to spreading our message through social media, and that is a skill in itself, and that's something that somebody could be devoted to. You can do amazing things if you light a fire on the social media, and it also means that we should and could diversify the media form in which we deliver our message. That it's not right. only broadcast radio, although that's certainly our core, but we should also be doing podcasting. We should be partnering with cable TV stations, possibly. We should be doing web stream simulcasting. There's all kinds of doing to cross promote ourselves.
Well, one of the things that like the management team started talking about recently, and I think they're doing a good job in California trying to put this together, is what was that problem? Podcasting, because of the rights to the music. And they are, the executive, people are putting together a place where we can have the music that we have the rights to, so that we can easily podcast. And then I know a lot of people that support BAI and talk about BAI all the time. They say we don't listen because you don't have podcasts. Or we cannot go podcast and download and listen for 15 minutes at a time. And so that initiative, I think I welcome a lot, and I hope it's very successful in the West Coast, and then we can just piggyback of it and use it. I think podcast, would be like the first step towards really going towards getting that done. Alex, I got to address what you were saying.